TED Audio Collective.
Hi, I'm Debbie Millman. Canva is great for designing visual content for work, no matter what industry or department you work in. Nail your next presentation with Canva Presentations. Start with a professionally designed template and use it as a springboard for your design. It's a serious time saver. Time to present but can't be there in person? Enter Canva Talking Presentations. Record yourself presenting and add your talking head to your slides so your audience can watch your perfected presentation anywhere, anytime. Start designing today at canva.com. Designed for work.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
This year marks the 10th anniversary of Design Matters, and to mark the occasion, we're replaying some favorite shows from the archive. This one, an interview with Tina Roth Eisenberg, was recorded in October of 2010. This is Design Matters with Debbie Millman from DesignObserver.com. On this program, Debbie Millman talks with designer Tina Roth Eisenberg about her blog Swiss Miss, about her Creative Mornings lecture series, and about her collaborative workspace.
Oh, my studio. I love my studio. I love coming to work every single day. It's my happy place. I wish everyone would have this.
Here's Debbie Millman.
On her very popular design blog, Tina Roth Eisenberg describes herself as a Swiss designer gone New York City. Well, let's elaborate out on that a little bit. Tina Roth Eisenberg comes from the northern German-speaking part of Switzerland. She studied design in Geneva and Munich before moving in 1999 to New York, where she worked for ThinkMap and Visual Thesaurus. She now runs her own studio, which, like her blog, is also called Swiss Miss. Her graphic design work for the web and for print is, as you might expect, very Swiss and features generous amounts of white space, clean lines, and a spare yet striking use of color. Her clients include the Museum of Modern Art and the Food Network. She joins me now at our studio at the School of Visual Arts. Welcome to Design Matters, Tina.
Thank you for having me.
It's so great to have you here. So you started Swiss Miss in March of 2005 as a personal visual archive. Why?
Well, like so many designers, you know, I will come in the morning with my bagel and my coffee and I would surf the web and see what's out there, what's new. And I would find all these amazing resources, tools, or just beautiful visuals that I want to keep. And I would, Swiss as I am, bookmark them and organize them very neatly. But my problem is that I'm just very visual. So I wouldn't remember a name of a product or of a designer that I saw. And I couldn't find anything after a while in my huge amounts of bookmarks. So I realized I need a visual archive for myself. And the next best thing was a blog. For some reason, I don't know why, but I started on Typepad and I needed a username. And I just like Swiss Miss. That's what everyone calls me. I was just going to use Swiss Miss. It wasn't taken, thank God. And now looking back, thank God I had something so catchy as a name.
So you grew up in a small town about an hour outside of Zurich.
Yes.
And you have written about how you've been influenced by the renowned Swiss design school and a lot of the fresh mountain air. But now you live in Brooklyn. So
yes.
Why Brooklyn?
I love Brooklyn. I call myself the unofficial ambassador of Brooklyn. Brooklyn is just like this, I call it I'm faking small town living in a big city, especially in Dumbo, because in Dumbo, I bike to work, I walk to work, and then I end up in Dumbo where I see the same faces over and over. It's not crowded. It's kind of like, it has the small town feel. But then I sit at my desk, I run a collaborative workspace in Dumbo, We sit right on the East River, and I look at Manhattan, and we always make jokes like, look, there it is. There's Manhattan. And if it wasn't for me teaching on Tuesdays in the city in Manhattan, I don't think I'd be in Manhattan all that often. I am a real Brooklynite.
So for our listeners that live outside of the New York or tri-state area, tell us what Dumbo stands for.
It stands for Down Under the Manhattan Bridge Overpass.
And so what does that mean exactly?
Dumbo is basically between the Manhattan Bridge and the Brooklyn Bridge. And it's what used to be a very industrial area and has now been masterfully curated by a family called the Valentas. They kind of curated this neighborhood into a very up-and-coming, design-centric neighborhood. I have a lot of respect for what the family Valentas did. They basically bought, I think in the 70s or 80s, they bought most of the real estate there, and everybody thought they're crazy. And I believe Mr. Valentas' wife is an artist, and she said, let's make sure that this area is always going to be very enticing to designers and creative people. So they turned a lot of the buildings into small studio spaces and affordable studio spaces and gave huge incentives to creative businesses to come into Dumbo.
And so when you first came from Switzerland, had you had your heart set on Brooklyn, or was it something that occurred once you got to this area?
I did my 1 year in Manhattan. And then I moved to Brooklyn and I never turned back. I even managed to turn my husband, who's a New Yorker, and I don't think he would have ever considered moving to Brooklyn. I turned him into a Brooklynite, and I turned him into a Mac user as well from PC. So
wow, that's pretty efficient and effective. Now, you completed your design studies in Geneva and in Munich. Where did you go to school?
The one in Geneva was after I started business and languages. I did a 1 year, like sort of a general course in all things creative. The school system is so different in Switzerland. If you want to study graphic design, you do this like general course first year. And this has been the best year of my life. All I got to do was paint and draw and sculpt and build things. And it was just amazing. And
that
was at the Ecole des Arts Décoratifs in Geneva. And while I loved the school, I didn't like the system too much. It was a little too schoolish. I knew I want to work a lot when I study. So I decided for the university in Munich to study graphic design, where it gave me the liberty to work a lot on the side.
When did you know that you wanted to be a graphic designer?
Pretty early on. I gravitated towards letters and posters and creating beautiful things with images. And I kind of had my calling early on. I'm very grateful for that.
Do you remember your first moment of being creative?
I mean, aren't all kids kind of creative in a way? I was drawing and painting all the time. And I mean, it's just part of me.
Did you have a moment where you knew that this was your passion and this was going to be your calling in life?
Yes. I have this slightly eccentric aunt, Hoogie, that was kind of the catalyst of my inspiration. She's very outgoing, very creative. She was a fashion designer by trade, and she actually, her partner was a graphic designer. And that I remember, we were in south of France on vacation, and he was doing his thing. He had a job to finish. And this was pre-computer. This was like hand lettering, hand drawing. And as a kid, you were so into drawing anyway, or I was. And I watched him do this assignment, and I just sat there, and I knew, oh my God, this is what I want to do. He makes money off this.
People give him money to be creative. So before starting Swissmiss, you worked at ThinkMap, where you served as the design director and helped design the visual thesaurus. Can you tell us about that experience?
When the founder of ThinkMap, one of the founders, Mark Tinkler, came up with the software, he wanted to showcase what you can do with it. So he had the idea of like making this 3D thesaurus, like an interactive 3D thesaurus, to showcase what this software can do. And he created Visual Thesaurus. And it's an amazing tool. I still use it when I'm brainstorming. Like if I have a client, I need to do branding or whatever it is, and I need a little start in the thinking process, and I pull up Visual Thesaurus, go to visualthesaurus.com, and you can type in a word. For example, one of my favorite ones is cool, putting cool, and then you get this spider that visualizes all the antonyms and synonyms, and you can interactively, you can click on them, and then when you click on a word, it comes into the center, and there's these nods that explain why they're connected and give you examples. And it's, for anyone that is into words, it's just, it's heaven. You get lost in there. And I still love using the tool, and I was able to help them with the branding, come up with just the overall style for the brand and everything that you needed, like packaging and the site and the actual user interface for the tool. It was hands down one of my most exciting projects I've ever worked on.
Now, it does have a very Swiss aesthetic. It's very clean. It's got a lot of white space. Was that something that you were involved in helping to create?
You mean the actual interface of
Yes, the actual interface.
No, I mean, I came in when the very first version already existed. I helped making the second version of the user interface, which added a lot of more features. And what I got to do was the packaging, which was beautiful project.
It's stunning.
I mean, just a beautiful project to work on. And all the marketing material that goes around it and the mark itself.
So did you help with the second version of the interface as well?
Yes. Yes.
Because it does feel very Tina Roth Eisenberg. It has such a cool, clean Swiss sensibility. And I think that there's something absolutely wonderful about being able to utilize the technology to be able to discover new words, but it's also just as wonderful to be able to go into the site and create the visual language on your screen as you're trying to find the words.
Yes.
And I really love that about the visual thesaurus.
It's very addictive.
So with English being your second language,
yes,
did you find it a challenge to do this type of word-based work?
No, I always thought that as a graphic designer, I'm so lucky that I was just able to switch cultures, and my English was horrible when I came here, absolutely horrible, because I focused on Italian during my studies for whatever reason. Don't ask me why.
Well, but, it's a beautiful language.
It is. And I always thought, man, thank God I'm not, a lawyer that has to, you know, craft these like very verbose, complicated, you know, sentence structures all day long. When you work in the visual world, you know, oftentimes can do stuff even though you don't know the grammar all that perfectly. So it was never a problem. And thank God by the time I worked at ThinkMap, I've been here long enough that my English was better.
Let's talk more about your blog. I read that you like to highlight the beauty in the ordinary.
Yes, that's very dear to my heart.
What do you consider to be ordinary?
Well, I can explain it with my thesis that I've worked on passionately when I finished my studies in Munich. And basically, that was a 200-page book about the beauty in everyday life, the beauty in the ordinary. And this has been a passion and a sort of a project that definitely has never left me, even though I graduated, 12 years ago. And what I did for that book is I photographed all day long. Like, I walked around and I tried to see the things I don't see anymore because we filter them out. Otherwise, we would have too much input all day long, right? We kind of filter out the everyday things, and I try to see them again. So, for example, I would have coffee with someone or tea, and we're sitting at a cafe, and I remember this one moment where my friend pulled out her tea bag, and there wasn't a plate she could put it on, so she put it on her napkin. And there was this beautiful red table, and then this white napkin, and she put the tea bag on it. And if you watch what happens, you know, it's black tea, like what happens on the napkin, the pattern that, you know, comes out of it. And I just sat there, and I stared at it, and I was like, I hope she finishes her sentence soon because I would like to take a picture of this. I always had a camera on me. I drove everyone nuts, right? And she already could tell what was coming. She's like, okay, go ahead, take a picture, do it, right? So this was going on with all my friends, and I told them about the project, and I involved a lot of my friends. I had a lot of writer friends or illustrators. And oftentimes in the beginning, they wouldn't understand what this was all about. And I tried to explain to them, just look at things that you don't notice anymore more carefully. And I got this one message on my answering machine. Back in the days, we had answering machines, right?
Yeah.
Where the night before, I explained to my friend in Berlin, would you like to contribute something? You're such an amazing writer. She writes a lot of short stories. And I explained to her the whole project. She's like, uh-huh. And I could tell she didn't get it. And then the next day, I get this message on my answering machine where she goes, Tina, I was brushing my teeth last night and I was thinking about your project. So as I'm putting toothpaste on my toothbrush, I'm realizing I have never really looked at my toothbrush before. She said she stood there for like 10 minutes looking at the bristles and the whole thing, and she got it. She wrote the best little short snippets for my book. And it was beautiful to see how my project had an impact on so many of my friends and how they looked at life in general.
Paola Antonelli, the design curator at the Museum of Modern Art, created an exhibit many years ago called Humble Masterpieces, mm-hmm. which was featuring the everyday objects that we often overlook.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of that moment of looking at a toothbrush really for the first time.
Yeah.
But I love the idea of these artifacts in our lives being considered masterpieces because mm-hmm. they do really help us live better, feel happier about just being alive without our even really being aware or grateful every single day.
They're so underappreciated. So next time you use a post-it note, just say thank you.
I love that. So in doing my research on you, I found several different bios of you, and some were from 2 years ago and some were from 3 years ago. And what I found so interesting about them was how each bio included the number of visitors visiting Swiss Miss over the years.
So I'm always being asked. I can't help.
Well, what's so interesting is in 2008, you had 350,000 visitors. In 2009, you had 600,000 visitors. And now you have over 900,000 visitors a month coming to Swiss Miss for visual inspiration. You have over 111,000 followers on Twitter. How do you think and why do you think your work and your curating and your blog and your sentiment about design has become so popular?
I think there's a few elements to that. A, I keep it somewhat personal on my blog, and I think people just want to connect with a person. And people that read my blog, they feel like they know me because I do share somewhat personal things, like things I like, things about my kids, things about my husband. I mean, not too personal, but somewhat. You know what my home looks like. You know what things I like. You know a little bit about my thinking about the world. And I think people really want to connect with a person. So that's A. They come and visit me a little bit, right? And then B, I just try to keep it very light and somewhat happy. And it's like this beautiful space you can go to when you need a break, and you know you might find something that makes you smile. And these days, that's all we need sometimes, right? I mean, there's
well,
a lot
I love
of...
that you tag things with made me smile.
Yeah.
Now, when you were pregnant with your second child, you actually put up a post about what the name of the baby should be. So talk about that experience.
That was like crowdsourcing gone extremes. My husband and I, we decided that our son is going to have a four-letter name. We
and
had
that's
to like
because
give
you
us,
all have four-letter names.
Yes,
so
and
it's
we figured
Tina
we need to
and Ella. And what is your
Gary.
Husband's name?
Yeah.
Gary.
So we wanted a four-letter name. And all the four-letter names that we had, I was, I think, about 7 months pregnant at that point. So we're getting to the point of like, this is going to happen soon,
yeah,
right?
Decision-making time.
Yeah. So we had a list, but we were all with them. Yeah. None of us got excited about the same ones. And we were lying in bed, like playing around with our iPhones. And I said, you know what? And we were discussing names. I was like, I'm going to tweet this now. So I put a tweet out. And within seconds, I got all these really cool names. And my husband and I were just sitting there hitting refresh on Twitter. It's like, this is amazing. It's like, Gary, I'm sorry, but I'm going to put this on my blog now. You know, we got to see what the blog can bring out. And I did it the next morning. And as I put the blog post up, I was like, oh my God, I think this is a little crazy now. This is a little too personal. But no, this is the post that has the most comments on it. Because I realized afterwards that everyone has an opinion on a name. It's just, you know, it's a very personal thing. It's very easy. There's no, you know. So I have about 470 comments on it at this point. So if you multiply that by three or four names, that's a lot of four-letter boy names you can
That's
pick from.
That's a lot of names. So did you end up picking the name from any of the 470 times three or four or five?
No, actually, we didn't. But it,
so
it
you
got
really,
us really
you really
thinking.
Must have pissed off an awful lot of people.
I'm sorry.
All that effort and nothing yeah. to show for it.
No, it really got us thinking in different directions, though. And that's why we ended up with my cousin's name, Tilo.
So another question that I wanted to ask you was the whole idea of crowdsourcing. There's a lot of dialogue right now, particularly in the design community, about the value or the lack of value in crowdsourcing. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on the current state of crowdsourcing, things like CrowdSpring or 99 Ideas, or thoughts about the direction or the future of crowdsourcing.
I oftentimes ask my reader questions, and I'm always humbled and absolutely floored at the quality of answers that come back and how immediate and how willing they are to share. Let's say if I'm researching camera bags or whatever it is, people are just so willing to share what they think is best, right? So there's a huge value in, like, say, a community like mine that I trust so much to be able just to ask a question and within minutes I get amazing answers, right? So I'm very grateful I have that. I see sites that I feel abusing it a little bit, or there's just certain crowdsourcing that I wouldn't approve of.
Anything you'd feel comfortable sharing?
Well, I don't want to name names, but if you if you abuse talent for your own financial good, I don't approve of that.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I feel like if you crowdsource, you have to do it in a way that you also give back again. That's how I feel comfortable doing it. And so I feel like I'm sharing a lot and I'm trying to share constantly that I can every now and then ask a question. And then also sometimes I try to make a blog post out of it if I get a lot of answers and people go like, can you sum it up? You know, what the results are, especially because this is the thing that bugs me on Twitter. I ask questions on Twitter and I make this hashtag and I even say, please use the hashtag so people can follow, right? And then people don't do it and there's no real way to track it. So I end up actually always saying, please now comment on my blog. Like I ask the question on Twitter, but I say, please comment on the blog so people can follow.
Now, do you ever feel that there are bloggers that are putting too much information out there? Do you feel like there is a specific privacy line that bloggers should be cognizant of? I know, for example, Heather Armstrong gets a lot of criticism about how much she puts out. She is the creator of Dooce, D-O-O-C-E.com. I happen to be a huge fan of hers. I love every morsel of personal information that she puts out. And I'm always somewhat surprised by the criticism that she gets about sharing her personal information, whether it be information about her children or her marriage, with her readers. And I could say that perhaps by asking your readers to help you name your son, for example, that people might find criticism in that as well. But I find it really refreshing and I find it really exciting to participate in a person's life in that way. And so I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
The reason why I was a little bit, like once I put that post up about the name, I think it was going a little bit too far, especially for my, what I consider how much I share of my life, right? So I was a little unsure there. And yes, I mean, Heather Armstrong, Dooce. To be very honest, at times when I read her blog every now and then, I tune in, it is a little too personal for me. Sometimes I feel like, but that's totally okay. I mean, if she feels comfortable doing this, I mean, this is a free world, right? I mean, more power to her. But as for me as a reader, it is actually sometimes a little bit too much. So I think that's a very personal question, what you feel comfortable with. And I just feel what I love about Heather Armstrong, you know, she gets a lot of criticism. And when she made the site Monetize to Hate, did you see that?
Yes, I did.
When Heather Armstrong did the page, right, just basically pulled all the comments, the negative ones, and put it on the site and put ads on it, I thought that's the brilliant answer to it. So at least make money off it, right?
So speaking of money, how are you monetizing Swiss Miss? I mean, you are doing such a service, such a community service for the designers and artists and creators out there. You curate the most extraordinary objects, whether they be ordinary, whether they be extraordinary. You can find them all on Swiss Miss. How are you able to spend as much time as you are on your site and benefit from it financially?
I was very lucky that about 4 years ago, Jim Kudal sent me an email right when I was looking for office space for the first time, thinking I need to not work from home once I start my own company. And he sent me an email saying, Tina, we would like to invite you to be part of the deck. I remember I nearly fell over. I was like, oh my God, this is heaven. Because I spend so much time blogging always, but I always felt like I can't justify all this time blogging by not making money of it. I need to pay my rent, right? So by being part of the deck that Jim Kudal started, I'm able to make money off a very small RSS feed-driven ad on the left-hand corner of my site. Most people don't even realize there is ads on my blog, and that's the beauty of it. And it's always relevant advertisers, so I actually end up clicking on it because it's really targeted towards the creative type. So with Kudal, with the Deck Network, and with Authentic Jobs, that's a sort of a job listings network I'm in, I'm actually able to live off my blog, and that's beautiful.
That's extraordinary.
Yes.
How do you determine what you're going to post on your blog, and how do you find all the ideas and products that you talk about? How does that happen?
How do I find them?
How do you find them? How do you research them? How do you keep your blog going? You post upwards of 5 posts a day.
I could do way more. But I remember I once had a day where I had about 20 posts on my site. It was a little much, I admit, but internet was on fire. It was only good stuff out there. And I just can't wait till tomorrow. If it's great, it needs to go up now. And I had this commenter saying, enough already. And he was not the only one. I think there were 2 or 3 saying, you got to stop. This is too much. We can't keep up. This is stressful. I'm thinking, who are you to tell me you're not paying me to do this? But I thought it was interesting that people were saying, you know, enough already. This is too much today.
Well, overwhelming them with beauty. That's a happy problem as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. So how do you choose what to post on your blog?
It's just a gut reaction. There's really no big plan behind it. It's what I like, what makes me look, what makes me smile. If I think it's a smart design, if I think it's relevant to my audience because it just fits the, you know, the overall Swiss Miss thinking, it's a 2-second gut reaction, usually.
And is it something that you plan? So you said you don't really do a lot of planning in advance, but if you're posting 5 pieces a day or more, how do you find them? Is it something that you just keep looking during the day and post as you find something that's interesting? Or do you plan for the next day, I'm going to
Never.
Do these? So you start every day completely fresh with nothing planned.
No.
That's extraordinary.
Oh, my God. There's so much to post out there.
And do people write you all day long asking for you to post about their products and their designs?
Yes.
And how do you decide what you're going to include?
I'm very lucky that I get so many submissions, but it has unfortunately gotten a little bit PR spammy. Sorry to all the PR people out there, but it's like a little sad, the stuff I get, because obviously they don't read my blog. I mean, it just doesn't fit. So I get so many submissions. I get a lot of really good submissions. Like usually when the headline says, I saw this today and it made me think of you, then I know it's one of my readers that saw something on their way to work and it's usually dead on.
Okay, we're going to have our producer edit that line out of this interview so that, no, I'm teasing, just so that, people don't start doing that just to get you to read it.
Oh, that's funny. I never thought of that. But I get so many submissions. It takes me so much time to go through it that I actually have now this wonderful virtual intern. He's in Virginia that helps me sift through my submissions inbox. And now it's much more efficient. And I love getting submissions. It's usually because my readers, they just extend my filters, right? And they know me at this point so well.
Now, in addition to being a blogger and a curator, you're a businesswoman. You have a series of lectures called Creative Mornings. You run this collective studio. Talk about your studio. I want to understand how you run a collective, how you've put this collective together.
Oh, my studio. I love my studio. I love coming to work every single day. It's my happy place. I wish everyone would have this. 2 years ago,
they do. It's called Swiss Miss.
Yeah, virtually. I mean, real, physical. 2 years ago, when I decided, after I've been renting desks in very cool spaces in Dumbo, I realized it's time that I have my own space. So I looked for an office space. And at the time, we were 3 partners, and we found a space right underwater in Dumbo. I mean, this white box right underwater, and we built it out with like these floating desks, very minimal, with a big conference table in the middle.
Really? Minimal?
Yes. Mm. And by now, it's been 2 years. I'm the only person on the lease, and it's sort of become my space, and I'm renting out desks, and I would advertise desks on Swiss Miss. And so very organically, just through readers that read my blog and want to come into our space, we have this amazing group of people right now. We sort of like a mini agency, and this really happened organically. We have developers, business people, copywriters, interior designers, an iPhone ninja. I mean, it's just the synergies that are happening out of our just being in this space together. The geek talks we have over lunch, it's just, it's so inspiring. Or for example, the To-Do app I did came out of the Studio Mates. We call ourselves Studio Mates. We also have now a neighboring studio, like a neighboring space opened up with even the more amazing view. So Workshop is a very cool design studio. They took it over.
Jesse.
Yes, they did the same model. So they're renting out desks now. And we're kind of this powerhouse of very creative, cool people in Dumbo. And I can't tell you how inspiring it is and how helpful. You know, sometimes I turn around and say, do you guys have some advice on XYZ or a contract? Or do you have a connection? And I think we all just get so much out of our space.
So you also created this app,
yes,
To Do, which is actually spelled T-E-U-X-D-E-U-X, To Do, so the French.
To Do.
And so tell us about what To Do actually does.
This came out of a lunch conversation. I watched my studio mate Cameron using Things, a very cool To Do app, which I've tried. I've tried them all. And then I said, Cameron, do you like Things? And he goes, yeah. And we started this big conversation about To Do apps. And then I went into my spiel on how they don't work for me. I have this very specific workflow and I sketched it out. I said, I need exactly this. I made a sketch in a browser. And I mean, here I am a web designer, right? It never occurred to me I could actually build it. I mean, why did that never happen in my brain? And Cameron just laughed in my face and goes, Tina, just design it. I'll build it for you, right? So I designed it the next day. I sent it to him on a Saturday. And on Sunday night, we had a working prototype, which is basically like this this week in front of you, and then every day you can add your tasks, and they just come like on a checklist, like a note list, right? And you can check them off. It's so beautiful. You can check them off.
Isn't that an incredible feeling of satisfaction?
The power of checking off.
Yes.
Or you can move it to the next day. And whatever you didn't do today, unlike on paper, it just moves automatically to the next day. Isn't that beautiful?
It is beautiful.
So that's
no
all
guilt.
It is. It's just minimal, and I have it as my homepage. So whenever I open a browser window, which is all the time, it hits me over the head what I actually need to get done. So we started using it in our studio space, Cameron and I, and then everyone else started using it. And everyone that came in asked, what is this? And so over time, we realized, you know, people really want to use this. Let's just give this away. So we made this very silly site, very silly demo video, obviously not planned as a business venture, and said, here, we built this. Here, world, use it, enjoy, right? And I blogged it last December, and 2 hours later, Fast Company wrote a blog post calling it the best to-do app of 2009. And Cameron and I, we just sat there looking at each other going, oh my God, what's going on? And then Daring Fireball and Seth Godin and everybody wrote about it. And we just sat there all day hitting the refresh button going, oh my God, what is happening? And now it's turned into a little business. We made an iPhone app and people are so passionate. I think I now understand what Apple feels like.
In what way? Tell me how.
You know, when you make products that make people so happy, I mean, Apple products make me unbelievably happy, right? Every day. I'm passionate about them. And the tweets we get every day on our To-Do account, I just sit there in awe. It's like, wow, we really touched people's lives. We must have struck a nerve with this. It's such a beautiful feeling of touching someone's life with a design you do, a product, and it's free on top of it.
You started a lecture series a year or so ago?
2 years.
2 years ago called Creative Mornings. And I was fascinated by the notion recently that the visual that you used for Creative Mornings, which was an aerial view of a coffee cup, was beginning to change. And recently I saw a visual of a cup of iced coffee. And I realized that you're now beginning to do Creative Mornings in different parts of the world.
Yes.
So Creative Mornings is now the beginnings of the Swiss Miss Empire reaching into different corners of the globe. Talk to me about Creative Mornings and talk to me about how you started this series and where it's going.
I had this desire to start a morning lecture series, which is free.
Why?
Which is, I'm very fortunate in that I'm being invited to either speaker conferences or attend them as press. So I get to attend all these amazing conferences and get to hear these wonderful speakers, right? And I will write about it on my blog. And I got a lot of emails from young designers saying, you know, you're so lucky. You get to see all these idols of mine. I would love to see them speak. I can afford it, or my boss can send me, whatever. And that made me think. So I realized, you know, let's organize something where young designers get to, before work, you know, a talk series before work that's free and completely accessible, where people can just go there and see, let's say, someone like Michael Beirut speak and have an inspirational morning and then go back to work. And also, it's really important to me that people meet. You know, it's great to connect on, you know, on Twitter and through blogs, but in the end, what it comes down to is meeting someone. And to be very honest, I love the presentations we have and the speakers, but to me, it's all about people meeting up. You know, there's nothing that makes me more happy than when I hear someone say, all right, you're so-and-so on Twitter. Didn't we have a conversation the other day? And that's what I want. I want people to meet up and, you know, and make connections and maybe end up building something cool together because a designer meets a developer, or just making these connections that help you in your industry and get you out of your cubicle.
And so how did you first begin the series? What was the first Creative Morning?
The first one was without a lecture. It was just in my studio. And I realized, oh, people do really show up.
How many people showed up?
I was like 70, I think. We had to cap it after.
So just by the virtue of posting an announcement on Swiss Miss, you had 70 people in your studio that morning to listen to whatever you felt like talking about.
I was just saying hello and saying, you know, I think I'm going to start the series now. And it was just a very informal meeting up. And then the next one, we had Carl Collins from Huge give a presentation, and Huge hosted it. So the concept of Creative Mornings was that it's always hosted in a different studio or art space or gallery or whatever it is, whoever opens the door. That is not always working anymore because we have such a huge interest.
So now hundreds and hundreds of people come to Creative Mornings.
Yeah, because usually in the beginning there were always like 50, 60 people, and they would fill up very quickly. And then I would get a lot of emails saying, you know, I really want to attend. And then I started trying to find venues that are bigger. And last January, that was the month before I had my second kid, I wanted to have sort of have a big bang, because I thought by having my second kid, I'm going to take a break from creative mornings. So I reached out to my dream speaker, which was Michael Beirut, and he said yes without even flinching, which floored me, because I started out this series thinking, I want to make a speaker series where Michael Beirut at one point would say, yes, I'll speak. That was kind of my goal. And he said yes. And then I approached Galapagos, which is an amazing art space, again in Dumbo. And they opened up their door. So we had over 300 people attending. And then I, of course, that was like the opposite of wanting me to take a break. And I was like, okay, now let's, we're continuing even full force. And then I...
bigger and better than ever.
I started thinking about chapters. And I started the Zurich chapter last month.
And so tell me, what does chapter mean? What is, how do you see this as a chapter?
I get a lot of emails from around the world saying, can we open a Creative Mornings here? Can we do this? And because they see the need for this, you know, meetup, this way of meeting people in the morning, and they all wanted to use my name. And I thought, you know what, maybe let's just start. Let's just start one in Zurich. I have a friend out there who I completely trust who said, you know, I'll run it for you. So it was this first experiment to see how he would do this. And the response was overwhelming. So I flew out last month for the kickoff and sort of to hand off the baby, right? And we had it at Google, which was exciting. We had it at the Google headquarters in Zurich. We opened up the RSVPs, and within 4 minutes, we had 150 RSVPs.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And I was like, wow, Zurich really needs this, which was exciting. And now next week, I'm actually flying to Los Angeles, and I have Sec Fricchetti from Good Magazine speaking and kicking it off in Los Angeles, which is very exciting.
It's fantastic. Thank you, Tina.
Thank you.
Tina Roth Eisenberg's design studio is called Swiss Miss. Her design blog has the same name, swiss-miss.com. I'd like to thank you for listening. And remember, we can talk about making a difference, we can make a difference, or we can do both. I'm Debbie Millman, and I look forward to talking with you again soon.